Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, February 8th, 2021. I'm joined by Alex Brown from Cornwall, England. Alex, how are things this week?
Very good. Thank you, Graham.
So our producer, Dennis, wanted to know how we met, and he thinks that our audience might be curious to know how we sort of first met and you know, so do you remember when it was? And I presume it was at Wharton, and that I think you were reading applications when I applied to Wharton, because you would have been there already, right?
That's quite possible, Graham. I might have been the reason why you're at Wharton. Who knows, right? But I mean, obviously, we met at Wharton. I was in the admissions office when you were a grad assistant for the admissions team. And then I remember chatting with you and possibly Elliot. Maybe Elliot was a year ahead of you. I think that was the case, but you can confirm that. But chatting with you about setting up a blog and doing that kind of stuff, because you were telling me what business you were going into and stuff like that. And it's quite interesting because it was at a time where, I mean, you look back and say, of course you've got to set up a blog. Of course you've got to do this now. But back then it was quite an interesting time. It was quite vivid memories, quite honestly.
Yeah, we were pioneers, yeah. all right, so tell me a little bit about the last week, because I know we're in this, like, interview invite mania. And, you know, when we recorded our episode last week, we were talking about how, gosh, HBS hasn't even said when their interview invitations are coming out. Sure enough, like, right after we recorded the episode, they posted to their blog. But tell me what's been going on and over the last week and what we have to look forward to this week.
Yeah, I mean, last week, that was the big news, HBS releasing interview invites, and massive congratulations to folks that leapt over that hurdle, simply because, as we know, HBS takes a deep cut. So if you've got the interview invite, your odds of gaining admissions rises fairly steeply. So that's very good, and lots of activity on Livewire when those decisions rolled out right on cue, just as HBS said they would do on Wednesday. And quite honestly, I mean, one of the pleasures of this type of work is sort of looking at all that feedback and reading the comments and various other things. And it's always interesting when you get a couple of folks, they're completely shocked that they get the interview invite, and then you're kind of looking at their stats, and they talk a little bit about what they're doing. It's like, absolutely, you should be at this stage of the process. So it is a very fun time to sort of, I mean, we're observers of what's going on at this point and just sort of observing how people react to these decisions.
So are you, what's on tap for this week though?
Yeah, this week, London Business School, INSEAD, and Wharton are the big hitters that are releasing interview invites. So, yeah, we're going to see a lot more activity over the next several weeks. Lots of stuff is still going on. It's just a lot of fun to observe.
Agreed. Yeah. And we've got, as I always remind our listeners, there are really good interview reports on the site. So if you're prepping for an interview, we have this whole archive, there are thousands of reports in it and questions. And so you can go in and practice and find the types of questions that you might be asked. And we also sell interview guides. They're really not expensive, and they're chock full of information on what questions you might get and how to answer those questions. Alex, I also have some good news in that I mentioned in Apple podcasts, we had like 79 or so reviews before and a 4.9 out of 5-star rating. And I was like, oh, it'd be nice to get above 80. And I think some of our listeners were kind enough to chime in. So we're now above 80 ratings. Still have that good 4.9 out of 5 stars, which is cool. And speaking of stars, we have implemented a new award system, which we just wrote about last week on the website. And I think most of our listeners know that if you are active on the website and you're posting comments and if people are liking those comments or even the posts that you share, you earn likes and you kind of accumulate these things, a bit like I think what they're called karma points or something over on Reddit. And, you know, we've always had it set up over the last year or so that at 30 likes, you get a star next to your name. At 60, you get 2 and 93. So when you see someone commenting on our website that has 3 stars, you know that they've obviously submitted quite a bit of content to the site and that that content has been well received and applauded. So, but we realized we wanted to maybe make this even more interesting for folks. And so we've introduced some incentives. So the first thing is if you get 30 likes, you can have a publication of your choice or a subscription to our Livewire data dashboard for free. So once you hit that mark, you'll get an email from us. There's nothing you need to do. It'll just happen. And you can pick a guide of your choice or subscribe to our data dashboard. If you hit 60 likes, you can select another publication or a subscription to the dashboard if you didn't take that the first time out. And you also get 2 free publications that you can give to someone else. So you just tell us who you want to have it, and we'll get that person a coupon. And then finally, and this one's the more exciting one, frankly, Alex, if you get to the 90-like 3-star threshold, we're going to give out a $90 Amazon gift card to anyone who hits that mark. So, Alex, I'm excited about this, and you know a lot about how many folks have hit these marks in the past, and I don't know if there's anything you wanted to say about this, but I think it'll be really cool to see folks accumulate these stars and get some recognition for it.
Yeah, I thought the coolest thing was a whole internal discussion in the business about loyalty liability, which is actually a subject I've only just started to read about myself for some other work that I do. But this idea that if we're planning to incentivize folks and offer them awards, you've got to make sure that on the balance sheet, you know how much that's going to cost and so on and so forth. But no, it's super interesting. I'm a big believer in community, as I've expressed on probably on several occasions. I love our star approach. I love the fact that other candidates can like each other's content, so you can start to see who are the main contributors on the site and so forth. And this is the second season we're doing this, and just seeing the new star contributors emerge. We've already got several that are starting to gain those stars from this season. And obviously the bulk of the conversation does actually occur during this time frame of sort of February through March and April, because you've got the round one folks making final decisions, whilst the round two folks are still in the midst of stuff. So there's lots of conversation going on, lots of liking and stars. So incentivizing with a little bit of cash, well, Amazon cash, I suppose, is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it'll be fun to see. So anyway, enough said on that, but you can, on the website, there's all the kind of details are laid out. But basically, just, you know, comment on people's posts. They'll probably like your comments if you're being supportive and helpful. And, you know, you'll be well on your way to kind of earning the likes you need to make your way to that Amazon gift card or to some free pubs. As always, you can reach out to Alex and I by just emailing info@clearadmit.com. Use the subject line wiretaps, and we're happy to answer any and all questions that you may have for us. Over on the website, we've done a couple of real humans lately. We did OSU Fisher and ESADE in Barcelona, 2 really good MBA programs that I think people need to know more about. So you can read up on those on the website. Also, last week, Tepper introduced, that's Carnegie Mellon, their MBA program now offers a deferred enrollment option, much like Wharton and Berkeley and Harvard and so many other top programs have done. And for those of you who don't know, deferred enrollment just means you apply when you're still in college, usually as a junior or senior, and you can get into business school and you know, you defer the start date. So you don't start for anywhere from often 2 to 5 years in most cases. So you go off and work, but you have that MBA seat waiting for you down the road. Seems like a pretty good deal to me. So Tepper has gotten into that game. Speaking of all that, though, on March 3rd, and this is kind of fresh, hot off the presses here, Alex, but on March 3rd, we're going to do a special online event with Wharton, Berkeley, and Yale about deferred enrollment programs. And we're going to have the admissions directors from those three programs. We're going to talk all about what they look for when they're trying to assess college students who are going to eventually come to the MBA, because that's a whole different ball game. So if you know any college students, and if you have those, you know, younger siblings in your life, or you happen to be a college student that's listening, stay tuned, because you'll want to sign up for that event. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I think it's going to be at noon Eastern, if memory serves. Alex, anything else this week? I know we've had a lot of housekeeping to tend to here, but is there anything else you want to tackle before we get into the Livewire posts or the wiretaps posts?
No, I think we should kick on.
All right, so let's move on then, and let's talk about Wiretap's candidate number one. So this person has 7 schools on the target list. They want to start school this coming fall, and the schools are Berkeley, Harvard, MIT, Kellogg, Stanford, Chicago, and Wharton. This person is in the military, and their title is Nuclear Surface Warfare Officer and International Relations. And I had to chuckle at that, Alex. I was telling you before we came on air that I was like, what is that? You know, do they go in with the international relations side and then only, you know, kind of fall back to the nuclear option if if things aren't going well? But anyway, this person's in the military, and they want to get into consulting after business school, and they're targeting Bain, BCG, and McKinsey. Their GMAT score is a 770, and their GPA is a 3.86. They've got 8 years of work experience, and they've already applied. So the current status is that they were rejected by Stanford in round 1. They've interviewed at Kellogg for round 2, and they have interview invitations at Chicago, Berkeley, and Harvard in round 2. They have not yet heard from Sloan or Wharton, because those are round 2 applications, and those schools haven't announced interviews yet. But Alex, what do you make of this candidate? Because on the one hand, the numbers jump off the page. On the other hand, the data point we have is that they were rejected by Stanford in round 1, but they have a handful of invitations to these other schools in round 2. So what do you make of this candidate?
Yeah, this candidate, I think, is a potential superstar. Not everybody gets into Stanford, obviously. And clear as day, this person didn't. I don't know that we know if this person interviewed at Stanford. So did they jump that hurdle? I don't think we even followed up and asked them about that. But they're invited to interview at Harvard. So that's a massive positive signal into round 2. And I would imagine that the other schools that they're waiting for, as long as they did a decent enough job with their applications, they're going to be interviewing at Booth and Haas and so on and so forth. Yeah, your point's well taken. Being in charge of nuclear surface warfare and being international relations, that is quite an interesting job title. Their numbers are absolutely outstanding. It sounds like their work experience is probably absolutely outstanding. So I'm not sure exactly what might have happened in the Stanford case, other than the fact that Stanford has very difficult choices to make, obviously, being a smaller class right at the very top of the pyramid. But I really like this candidate. And frankly, their goals I found were absolutely fantastic also, and dovetailed very well with their experience to date. Quite honestly, Graham, this person really has to go to a top school.
Yeah, I agree. I think one of the things that I was curious to know, and I don't know, maybe you had an interaction with them on the site, but they mentioned they want to get into consulting, right? And I wanted to know more about what that looks like, you know, kind of in the longer run.
Right.
Because, and I did wonder, like, if maybe what happened with Stanford is they just didn't differentiate enough, or even though, I mean, frankly, like you, I agree, they kind of have a pretty home run of a candidacy. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to answer that question for you quite succinctly, Graham. Their goals are terrific. And without going into the detail of the goals, it hits the 4 markers. I've now remembered what the 4th marker is. The last time we talked about long-term goals, I could only remember 3 out of the 4 markers. But once I read this person's long-term goals, I remembered all 4. Their focus goals, their ambitious goals, their realistic goals, and their impactful goals. Those are the 4 markers that you really want to try to hit when you're targeting the very, very top schools.
Mm-hmm.
And in my mind, this person's thought long and hard. They're a military candidate. So it's not unusual for a military candidate to go consulting directly after the MBA experience so they can put into practice what they've learned in the MBA experience. That's fairly standard path. But it's what's more interesting to the ADCOM is what happens after consulting. And this person, you know, their military experience is dealing with sort of nuclear energy and so on and so forth. So they're basically, I plan on joining consulting firms. So we talked about that, focusing on alternative energy, which fits with my nuclear surface experience. To develop a large clientele network, as well as gain experience in the business and energy sector. I'd then like to transition that experience to a startup focused on providing a sustainable and economic energy infrastructure solution to developing nations, which fits with my background work in Africa. Seems to hit the mark to me, Graham.
All right, you got me. Yeah, and you know what happened is that, yeah, they wrote that to you after I had pulled up their profile. Yeah. So that's what happened, because I was like, oh, you know, okay, MBB, that doesn't really stand out to me. It's a very reasonable goal, as you say. But now that we know the background and the longer-term plan, I agree. So then I guess, so your answer to the question of why they didn't make the cut at Stanford is Stanford has to make tough choices. Do you think there are any other theories out there? I wondered if maybe 8 years of experience was a bit rich for them, or I don't know. I'm just kind of wondering what's going on there.
Yeah, I mean, again, we don't want to stereotype different schools.
Yeah, agreed. This
person has 8 years of experience. Stanford's very much into looking at that sort of potential and that potential superstar type folk. But I don't know that necessarily was the issue. But with 8 years of experience, making sure that they established fit, that's going to be very important for any of the schools they apply to. Engaging directly with the veterans clubs in this case, really understanding how the program's going to work for them and so on and so forth. They may well have done all this. And again, Stanford is, you know, a smaller program taking a deep cut. So it's going to be extremely challenging, even for the very best. But nevertheless, I really like this person's goals. Their numbers are extraordinary. And quite frankly, if they went across the board M7 without any positive news, I think I'd have to quit this job.
All right. Yeah, I presume.
I don't really want to say that because I kind of need this job living in Cornwall and not whatever. But the point is, I'd be floored.
Yeah.
But it does. It boils down a bit to application execution. We obviously know that.
Yeah.
The best people can mess up the application process. But this person has been very eloquent on ApplyWire, addressed issues. They're right. Everything looks good to me, Graham.
Agreed. Yeah. And I would say if there's an admissions lesson in here, it's probably that the numbers don't ever guarantee you anything. And that's why, you know, even the best of candidates should always apply to a few schools and see where the chips fall. Anyway, I think enough said. Thanks to that candidate for their service as well and for sharing all their background with us on the site. Very interesting candidacy and best of luck. Obviously, they've got some work to do. Get ready for that HBS interview and probably some others that they're prepping for too. So good luck to them. Let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this person has six schools on the target list. They are Cornell, the Indian School of Business, Michigan, Northwestern, NYU, and Yale. And they want to start next fall, and they've actually already applied to this batch of schools, if I understand correctly. And they've been working in product management. They want to pivot into tech. And the companies on their target list are Amazon, Apple, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, Oracle, Tesla, and Twitter. Kind of who's who of tech companies out west. They have a 740 on the GMAT, and their GPA is a perfect 4.0. They've been working for 4 years, and this person's in Germany, although they are originally from India. And they didn't state that, but I kind of guessed at it in the comments, and they confirmed that they're an Indian male with an IT background. So they said, I understand I'm from an overrepresented pool of applicants. So Alex, what do you make of this candidate? Because on the surface, I mean, the numbers are great. They, you know, they're working in Germany, which is not so common for a kind of typical Indian IT male. Many of those candidates are in India, right? So, but what do you make of this candidate and their chances?
I just wish they were applying in round one and not round two, quite frankly, Graham.
Yeah.
Because this will be challenging for this candidate. I mean, their numbers are very good. Probably their experience is very good. But they do fit into that overrepresented population. So schools really do have to focus on making sure they bring in a nicely balanced incoming class and so on and so forth. We all understand those issues, etc. I have seen speculation because, you know, things look maybe even a little bit tougher for these overrepresented pools, that maybe folks from last season had to defer a little bit more from these populations, which has shrunk some of the available seats for these populations in this season. I don't know if there's any truth to that, Graham, but there's definitely a bit of speculation on the wires in that regard. So I would say this is very, very tricky. If this person was applying in round one and they've got Cornell and Ross and K Kellogg, Yale and Stern on their list, which they have. I'd be like, this person's got a real good fighting chance, great app execution, they've got work experience in Germany, so they're going to stand out a little bit in that regard, and so on and so forth. It just gets more difficult in round two. They did say that Cornell had reached out to them about some missing element of their application or getting, you know, something submitted extra. Quite frankly, I think that's actually a positive signal. Otherwise, they just really wouldn't care. Why would they want an official document if they were already deciding not to do something in somewhat of a positive fashion? So there might be some opportunity here. But this person's already, you know, pulled the trigger, made their applications. We've got to really hope now that they get an opportunity to sit in front of some interviewers and make their case there. If they haven't heard from Kellogg at this point, Graham, it's getting a little bit later because, as we know, Kellogg tries to interview most of its candidates. So they have a bit of a different process in that regard.
Yeah, and I think Michigan has delivered most of their invites too. Obviously, yeah. Candidates who haven't heard from Michigan are either going to be waitlisted or rejected sometime in March. So it's getting a little late. I do think Yale will still push out some invites, as will Stern. Not sure of the ISB's calendar. And it does sound like, as you said, Cornell might be interested in this person because they're asking. I think the issue was there was a problem with his test score PDF. It didn't have his name on it or something. I think that did make me wonder if he, you know, if that needs to be verified with the other schools. Like if Cornell is pointing out that there's something missing, if I were that candidate, I'd want to make sure that it's complete everywhere. I think you raise a great point. In fact, two great points is that if you're in an overrepresented portion of the applicant pool, you don't really want to apply in the second round. You really want to be in the first round. And that this year may really be difficult for the kind of Indian male population or just because, at least let's say the international population looking at U.S. schools, because many of those internationals may be deferred last season because of COVID, which means, as you said, these schools have slots already taken up with deferred admits. And so, you know, particularly when you get to a country like India where there are lots of candidates, it could be tight. So in any event, I hope that, you know, things chips fall in a positive way for this candidate and that they get some interview notifications soon, because I do think it seems like a really quality candidacy. It's just they need to find a way to stand out in a crowded field. But we'll see. They still have time on a handful of these schools, and hopefully it'll come together for them.
And if they're not successful, Graham, get in, reapply in that first round.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking, is that they have 4 years of experience. If they're able to stay at their current job, get another year of experience in Germany, or you know, maybe they get sent somewhere else that's interesting, wouldn't be the end of the world if they're able to stay in that job and apply first round next year. That would be my advice. We'll see. But hopefully things fall. Hopefully things fall into place this year. So let's move on and talk about our last candidate. So this is Wiretap's candidate number 3. So you chose a Decision Wire entry, which we've been doing for the last several weeks, as our third Wiretaps candidate. And this person is undecided, as usually the Decision Wire entries that we select for the program are. They were admitted to Harvard, Kellogg, and Wharton. They'd also applied to Stanford and Columbia, but I don't believe that they got favorable news from those programs, or at least they hadn't heard yet or something. So we're really down to these three: Harvard, Kellogg, or Wharton. This person was working, wants to get into consulting, after business school, and had a 770 on the GMAT and a 3.4. And they write on their post, they said, "Not a big fan of the case method. Am I crazy to turn down HBS?" So Alex, is this person crazy?
I asked them to ask you, Graham. Are you crazy, Graham?
I think some would say, but the reason, and I know where you're going with this, and that's because I also was accepted to Harvard and Wharton and some other programs. I did not apply to Kellogg, but so I was in a similar situation as this candidate. And I, too, was a little wary of the case method. I actually love the case method, and as this person may know, Wharton uses the case method. And in fact, almost every leading business school on the planet uses the case method and uses Harvard Business School cases in the classroom when they're using the case method. But the difference is that a place like Wharton only about a third of your class work and coursework is going to be case-based, whereas at Harvard, it's really close to 100%. So a very different approach to the teaching. Wharton uses a mix of, you know, lecture, team projects, and case, whereas schools like Darden and Harvard are really more all case-based. So, yeah, I don't know, but my decision aside, Alex, like, do you think this person should be debating at all? I mean, they want to get into consulting. What's your take? Like, they could presumably do that from either of these programs. It sounds like they're down to Wharton and Harvard as their decision points here. But what do you make of this?
Yeah, I mean, clearly, they've got outstanding numbers. They're obviously a bit of a superstar. They've got great opportunities on the table. The question is, do they get equal access to, let's say, top-tier consulting, MBB, at Harvard, Kellogg, and Wharton? We know they get full access to elite consulting at all three schools. The question is, does Harvard give them a little bit more access, a little bit more opportunity over its rivals or not? I mean, I don't know what the data says in terms of answering that question, Graham, but I would scrutinize that very closely. But we know that Kellogg is famous for being a great place for consulting. We know that Wharton's also a great place for consulting. So I imagine that actually those first two or three years post-MBA, it will make little difference which of the three schools that they choose. The question is, in the long run, in the very, let's say, if you think 10, 15 years, 20 years from now, does the strength of that Harvard brand and the network and sort of everything that it means in terms of making connections, does it have an impact for this individual relative to a similar network, probably not quite strong, Wharton and then Kellogg? That would be my only consideration at this point, Graham.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think the biggest thing for me, because frankly, this person could go to, you know, Harvard or Wharton and end up doing just fine. The new CEO of Amazon is a Harvard grad. The CEO of Google is a Wharton grad. I mean, there's plenty of these schools.
You couldn't wait to get that one in. Could
yeah,
you,
hot off the press.
And where does the Apple dude come from?
Duke, yeah. So it's...
Yes, so we got the CEOs of all the top tech companies. Who's the CEO of Facebook? Where did he come from?
Well, actually, I don't know. Isn't Mark Zuckerberg a Harvard dropout? Or I can't remember if he finished Harvard or not. But yeah. So, but undergrad. Yeah. So the point I was going to make is just that these two schools, if we're just talking about Wharton and Harvard in this instance, but I think it applies to all three, they're really different from one another. Yeah. And I pointed out in a comment to this poster that, you know, at Wharton, you can waive core courses if you can demonstrate competency. So if you're an accountant or you have a CFA, like you can start finance at a higher level or accounting at a higher level than some of your peers might. If you demonstrate competence, you can take an exam and waive a core course and get into electives and more breadth and depth and stuff. At Harvard, everyone takes the core curriculum regardless. So you could be a CPA, you're taking Accounting 101 at Harvard, there are no waivers. And what that does is it provides a really close-knit community because every single person on that campus, all the first years, are taking exactly the same classes throughout the entire first year. So it's super, it's rigid, but it does create this nice environment in that, you know, you could be in line next to someone at the, you know, lunch counter and they've read the same case as you the night before, right? So that's one thing. Then the other thing is, you know, the teaching methods are really different, as I already touched upon. And I think, you know, Wharton tends to take this sort of like, they try to apply quantitative rigor and international emphasis wherever they can. That's like the Wharton hallmark. I think Harvard is a bit more focused on, you know, C-level strategic thinking. So it's just different approaches. And I also think, you know, this person needs to do their due diligence. Frankly, given the number of Wharton undergraduates that are out there, the alumni network for Wharton is actually really strong globally because it's all one network, whether you've done undergrad or grad. I mean, obviously, I like the MBAs a lot because that's what I did, but there's a massive network across the entire school.
Does that mean Elon Musk takes your phone calls?
Well, I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of his actually, but I, but he might if I wrote to him. I don't know. But yeah, so he is an undergrad, Wharton undergrad. That's correct. And his, I actually remember his email is in the system. I did look for it once for a friend.
Nice.
So in any event, these are both, you know, they're, this person's not going to go wrong. I would even argue, you know, you might say, oh, are they going to raise money at some point for some sort of venture? Well, I mean, both Wharton and Harvard have tremendous networks when it comes to financing a business. So I'm not worried about that either. I think it's, for me, this should come down to fit. I don't think it's going to, I don't think McKinsey's going to take more Harvard people than Wharton people. I mean, there may be ups and downs in various years, but I know that for McKinsey, both Harvard and Wharton are, and Kellogg, are focus schools. And they only have a handful of schools that are focus schools. I think it's a number somewhere between 6 and 9, or maybe it's 10 schools. So they don't, you know, they, if you're a focus school for McKinsey or Bain or BCG, then that's enough. Like, I don't think it matters which one you're going to. So that's my take. I think this person needs to go where they want to go. And you know, I obviously most people choose Harvard in this situation because it's the bigger brand. But there are people like me who sometimes choose another, you know, make another decision. So anyway, anything you want to add on this one though?
No, I mean, I think it is a very interesting conversation because by default you think they'd select Harvard. If you do the research on DecisionWire, which you can sort by multiple schools, multiple sort of admit schools, and see where people prefer to go. So you can readily do that research, and data would say Harvard will win 9 times out of 10. But at the end of the day, this person, you know, has great opportunity. Wherever they choose to go, Harvard or Wharton or even Kellogg, I'm absolutely convinced that they'll be super successful and not look back on that decision.
Yeah, agreed. So yeah, do your homework if you're listening, the poster, and yeah, good luck wherever you land. It should be a fun journey. Alex, before we wrap this week, there are two things I wanted to call your attention to that you actually pointed out to me. One of them is you shared with me a post that someone had put up who's going to Harvard this fall. They had applied to Harvard and MIT and only got into HBS and were also offered like $110,000 scholarship. So that made the decision, the quote, non-decision really easy, right? So they're headed off to HBS. They had a 327 on the GRE and a 3.3 GPA. They want to work in tech. And they just mentioned something that was really nice of them to say. They said that HBS's financial aid was no joke, very generous. And I really felt that Graham and Alex on the podcast and ApplyWire made a huge difference for me. They gave me so much confidence and reassurance that I didn't just see in any of the other MBA application resources out there. Thank you guys so much. So on the off chance that that person is listening, I wanted to thank them personally for their really lovely comment. That makes it so much more fun for Alex and I to do this podcast and to answer questions on ApplyWire when we hear that kind of feedback. So bravo to that person. Nice to have HBS with $110,000 scholarship too.
Yeah, fantastic.
And then, do you want to talk about there was a LiveWire entry that we got? Someone had gotten an interview invitation to Stanford, and they had a 690 on the GMAT. They're in Scotland.
Yeah.
They had a 4.0 GPA, a first class honors. I believe this person went to school in the UK, is my guess. What I mean, I thought was interesting, just a 690 and they get an interview at Stanford, which proves that, you know, you don't have to have a perfect GMAT score to get in there.
Yeah.
But there was some other stuff going on, too, that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, they got an interview invite at Stanford. They got an interview invite at Harvard. They can't believe they got invited to either of the schools, which is absolutely fantastic. And they celebrated with a bar of chocolate because apparently wherever they are, they don't serve Veuve Clicquot or something, which would really stifle my celebrations. But absolutely hats off to them. And again, it's all about your story. Obviously, the numbers are super important. I'm not dismissing numbers. And obviously, we highlight a lot of candidates with outstanding numbers like the candidates we highlighted today. But the numbers put you in the picture and put you in the frame. It's going to be your story that truly counts, and so on and so forth. And yeah, this person seems nice and humble. Business schools love humble folks. They love really successful folks that remain humble and remain grounded, and so on and so forth. And this person just came across as fitting that that persona, as it were, or whatever you want to call it. So I'm always delighted when I see people that are really sort of nicely surprised by their success rather than, you know, assuming they've just jumped another hurdle, which I'm not saying folks necessarily do that, but it's just really refreshing reading some of this sentiment.
Yeah, and I thought it was cool. I think what you were referring to is they work in oil and gas, and so they're out on a rig somewhere, and they don't have any booze,
yeah.
So they're just having a bar of chocolate to celebrate. Very cool stuff. And, you know, I would also just mention that, you know, when you're applying from Europe to a top U.S. MBA program, there's a certain cachet in that. The schools are not receiving tons and tons of applications from certain markets, especially. There probably aren't that many people in Scotland applying to Harvard and Stanford and other top schools. So that helps too. But I could not agree more. This person just came across as really humble. There was a great dialogue they had on the site with a bunch of our fellow community members, including one 3-starred community member. So lots of fun to see, and appreciate them sharing the great news. And again, to those of you still waiting on interview invites, or those of you who are nervous as you prepare for interviews, best of luck as we move into this next phase of the admissions season. And Alex, we'll be back in 1 week's time with another episode of Wiretaps. And I appreciate all the work you do every week picking out these profiles to discuss.
Very good. Thank you very much, Graham. And everybody, please stay safe. Good luck. Take care.